Hello, Oregonians, and welcome to Life and Legislation with Lucetta. If you've ever wanted to get to know your politicians personally or understand what it is they are actually doing, then you're in the right place. I'm your podcast host, Jessica Campbell.
I'm your state representative for House District 24, Lucetta Elmer.
This podcast is a place for you to get to know Representative Elmer, both personally and professionally.
We want Oregonians to feel connected with and educated about their state politics. So we're so glad you've joined us on a fresh new podcast adventure as we cover all things about life and legislation.
Hey, Oregonians, and welcome back to Life and Legislation with Lucetta. Lucetta, thank you for taking time to do this. I know your schedule is just insanely busy right now. At the time of this recording, you're in these kind of 12-hour days with 15 minutes here and there. And last time we learned that you have two new grandbabies. And so before we do anything else, I just wanted to ask how they're doing. How are their parents doing? How are things going for you? Any big changes from motherhood to grandmotherhood?
Wow, this is when I wish that this were visual as well as audio, because I would just show you all the pictures I have of these two precious grandchildren. But they're doing well. Tatum Gray is now 1 month old, and he is now 8 pounds, 1 ounce. His birth weight was 6 pounds, 10 ounces, so he's gaining like a champ and just amazing. And Lottie Lee is right behind him at 3 weeks old, ahead of him in her weight class, a little over 9 pounds. And, you know, we got to have them, the whole family was at our home for Easter, and it was just beautiful and lovely and so fun to have two new little ones in the mix. To your question about what has changed from motherhood to grandmotherhood, lots of new gadgets, I will say. A lot of new things that moms need and have in their repertoire of taking care of their kiddos. But as far as from my perspective, it is just so amazing to see your children become parents. And then, you know, to see that bond that they have with their own children. And I love it. And I obviously am just overjoyed with the grandchildren part. And it's so fun to be able to just pop in and help, but you're not in that exhausted stage of life. You're just there to help. And then you go back to your home and gear up for the next time that you get to go help.
Right. And as I understand, you got to help a little bit with some of these overnight shifts.
Yes. Yes. So part of my life, I think we talked about, you know, coming out of college, my study of education was education, primarily early childhood. I got my degree in elementary ed, but then I went on to do another 2 years specifically in early childhood education and child development, and spent a lot of time teaching with that age group. And in Denny's in my church, we taught a lot of parenting classes and marriage classes. And some of the parenting classes that we taught were all around sleep training. We probably did that for a decade. And so there's definitely a lot of history I have with that, and something I feel very comfortable with. Fun side note, my sister lives in Florida and she has 5 children, and she had me come to Florida for all 5 to help sleep train them. So that was fun. So with Lottie and Tatum, I have had the pleasure of going and just giving some reprieve. They're still so little, and obviously the parents are tired, and I've been able to take some of those late night into the early morning shifts and let them get some extra sleep.
That's amazing. Well, I have a feeling most of the listeners are tuning in because they want to know what's going on in the, you know, legislative world, or just know who you are personally. But just in case there are any new moms listening, if you were to give them one piece of sleep training advice, what would that be?
Don't be afraid to hear all about it. You know, it's not a scary thing to get your child on a little schedule. And it's definitely not a hardened heart, like just let your baby cry it out. That's not it at all. It is a beautiful win-win. What's best for baby and what's best for the parent to be able to get some much needed sleep. So it's pretty basic. Sometimes I just think there's a stigma around, oh, this is hard, or this is going to hurt my baby. But it's not that at all. Usually they're much, they're just very happy because they're getting the food and the sleep they need. So.
Right. And aren't we all happier when we get the food and sleep we need?
Yes. It's amazing how our bodies appreciate that.
Right? The basics in life, I feel like are, society, culture doesn't do the best with that anymore. Well, Lucetta, I know because we've been friends for so long, and hopefully our listeners are learning this as well, that you are very much a family woman and you value family. And that is true both in your personal life, but also in your political career. And as I understand it, you have a few bills that you've either championed yourself or maybe are supporting of somebody else's that are related to family. So maybe we can talk a little bit about what those bills are, and as time allows, find out where they are at in the process of maybe becoming a law.
Yes. So there's three of them that I can think of right now. The first one that we can talk about would be my EITC bill, which stands for the Earned Income Tax Credit. So that to me is a family-friendly bill because it's a refundable tax credit that's primarily for low to moderate income individuals with families, especially those with children. So that one is just, I think, one that's super relevant right now when we continue to talk about the cost of living being on the rise and how expensive it is for everything from eggs to gas to, shoes for the kiddos. So that's one that I am excited about. And I did a public hearing on it, and then it is sitting in a committee that potentially can still move, but we're just waiting. But I also did some work with a bill around IVF, in vitro fertilization. And that is one that there's just so much movement and talk about around the issue. We ended up starting it on the Senate side. So I was involved in the process and I had a House bill. But for whatever reason, sometimes it is more strategic to start bills in one chamber rather than the other. And we just thought it would have a better shot of being over in the Senate. I think the Health Committee in the Senate maybe didn't have quite as many bills as the House side. So we started it over there and it did pass. And so we're waiting for it to be seen over on the House side. But this bill would allow coverage for insurance companies to cover IVF. And that would just be so amazing in so many different circles of people that are struggling to start their family. So very excited about that one as well. And then the adoption bill, and that one has passed the House and it is now in the Senate, and it passed unanimously in the House. I can't see anything stopping it in the Senate, so I am excited to see that land on the governor's desk soon.
Now, I wanted to actually talk a little bit about the adoption bill and just give you a chance to explain what it is, why it matters to you. And if I remember correctly, at one point, wasn't there some sort of a roadblock with it for maybe a moment? I don't know how long that lasted. And then what happens if there is a roadblock? I think that's one of the conversations that would be great to have if a bill is moving along and at any point in the process it gets stalled or stopped or, I don't know, ignored, whatever. Then what are the other options? Can you take a detour? Do you have to wait and start over the next year? Is it just kind of dead forever and you have to change it? Can the public voice make any difference? So I'm just curious about that, but let's maybe talk about that within the framework of the adoption bill. So we'll start there. What is it? What would it do? And then how has it gotten so far in its journey?
So the adoption bill designates August 25th every year, beginning this year, 2025, moving forward as Adoption Awareness Day. So be on our calendars. It would be a day designated to bring awareness and elevate adoption, celebrate adoption. This bill found itself in Rules, which is a committee that I'm in. And when I presented it, I don't know that there was anyone in the crowd. I was supposed to go at the beginning of the committee and ended up getting pushed to the end. And by that time, I don't think anyone was left except for the committee members who were listening. And I did have a fellow Democrat from the House that co-sponsored it with me that adopted his children. And so we presented the bill and had good conversation from the perspective of me being an adoptee and Representative Nose being someone who adopted. And I thought it was wonderful. And then a few weeks later, I heard through the vice chair of that committee, who happens to be our minority leader, say that she had heard the chair say he wasn't planning on giving it a work session, which was the next step that it needed to get out of committee and continue on its journey. And I was like, why? What do you mean? This is a feel-good bill. Like, why wouldn't we do that? And she was like, I don't know. And she said, is it that important to you? And I said, you know, it is. It is important to me, I think, for many reasons. But in Oregon, you know, we talk about a lot of different topics around children. And I think that one that I just would love to be able to come together and talk about in a celebratory way is adoption. And so I'm always looking for lanes, avenues that I can have, you know, more of a positive spin on our state. And I mean, to be frank, you know, abortion is a topic that divides us constantly. And it's a topic that's used in campaigning in a really ugly way. And it's just hard. So I am always looking for things that I can do that isn't going to just be the negative, divisive road, right? And I thought this was one of those. So she said she would advocate for it, and it was put back on the agenda and had a work session, and it sailed through. When it came to the House floor, I stood up to carry the bill, meaning that I'm the bill sponsor, essentially, and I spoke on it, and I touched on my adoption story. I touched on foster kids that have been adopted, just all the different parameters around adoption. And then I sat down, and I didn't know. I assumed the other person on the bill would speak, but, you know, I didn't really know for sure. And what happened was so incredible. Representatives started standing up from all around the House, and people that I had no clue had a tie to adoption or had been impacted in a positive way stood up and shared. And there was this moment and this feeling in the air where we all came together, both sides of the aisle, around a beautiful topic. And at the end, when all of the representatives are done speaking to the bill, the Speaker of the House will say back to the bill carrier, which was me, do you wish to close? And a lot of times, you know, people say no, because they already opened with why they have the bill, so they don't need to close. But on that particular one, I stood up and I said, yes, I would like to close. And I just acknowledged the feeling that we were all feeling and how this topic really brought us all together. And that particular day, we had some pretty heavy bills that were going to be up next that we had to vote on that were going to be very divisive and partisan. And I said, I know that's coming, and I know that happens a lot in this building, but I just want to pause and be super grateful for this moment when I got to hear so many of my colleagues share, and it really, you know, united us, and it was very beautiful.
That is amazing, because yeah, most of us, when we think about politics, we think about the negative.
And right, exactly.
We think of the arguing and the, you know, really extreme sides just lashing out at each other. And like I said, I mentioned in one of the episodes, for so many of us, the extent of our political knowledge is a little bit of what we remember from high school and mm-hmm. what the commercials say.
Right, and right.
Most of the commercials are not really explaining, you know, who people are and what's going on and how does it mm-hmm. work and what does this mean. It's so many of them are just, you know, really bashing the other side. So,
yep, exactly.
And we had said that was the goal of this podcast, that's not the purpose of this political conversation. This is much more educational and informational and friendly.
Yes.
And so I so appreciate that. And I know that was really special for you. And is there a reason you picked that particular day for the Adoption Awareness Day?
Yes. That was the day I was adopted. So I was born August 22nd, and then 3 days later was adopted. So that was why I chose the day.
Yeah. And so looking forward, assuming that this continues to make its way through all of the steps and to the desk and gets signed into a law, it's similar to what we talked about in the previous episode, it's an awareness day. It's not, mm-hmm. there's nothing that the law says you have to do or don't do. It's just a specific day to elevate the conversation. And then mm-hmm. communities can do what they will with that, right? Maybe adoptees sure. or families who adopted will start sharing their stories, I don't know, on social media or have celebration yeah. days or yep. whatever. Is there a certain way you would love to celebrate that day in our House district?
Yeah, I'm not specifically right now in my mind, but you know, I think of how Child Abuse Prevention Awareness Month, I'm not sure if I said it all right, is the month of April. And a lot of times you see pinwheels all over in April, and that signifies, you know, what we're taking time to honor or elevate. And in 2023, when we voted on an abortion bill in Oregon, I knew it was extremely divisive and controversial. And so I thought about it a lot, and I chose to share my adoption story. It was a very vulnerable moment, and I shared it before hundreds and hundreds of people because people just were packed at the Capitol protesting one way or the other about this bill. And the piece that I chose to talk about wasn't to make it legal or illegal. I just said that in 1970, when my birth mother found herself pregnant with an unplanned pregnancy, it was before Roe v. Wade, and it was before our current society's voice, which says, in my opinion, you know, these unplanned pregnancies can be inconveniences, and we can take a pill to get rid of that inconvenience. And so a portion of the bill was around public dollars going to college campuses to fund the abortion pill. And I said, if we're going to do that, I would like the same amount of public dollars to be spent educating college students on adoption so that they had both sides of the coin and they had both choices presented. Because I said, I feel extremely fortunate that in 1970, it wasn't a society where the voice was saying it's an inconvenience or the norm would be to dispose this way. It was a different time. And those options weren't made available. And I think one could say, well, they could see that as a negative. I obviously, as an adoptee, saw that as a positive because I'm here today to speak about it. And, you know, my particular story worked out, and my birth mom, you know, made a very hard decision to give me up, but she also chose to allow me to have life. And so I just want to elevate that conversation so that people who find themselves in that situation know all the choices.
Well, I appreciate you sharing both of what's going on politically and just some of your personal life too. I know this can be a very vulnerable topic, but it's important to know what's going on. And hopefully in our upcoming episodes, we can hear more about these other bills, about the tax credit and IVF, and what does that mean? And what does that look like? And how does it make its way through? And then we can talk more about all the different avenues that a bill can get maybe detoured and could still make its way to a law.
Yeah. And just to touch on that, I mean, all of those that you said could happen. If a bill gets stuck, you know, you can do an amendment to maybe try and come to agreement with whomever is finding an issue with the bill. If you, the bill carrier, are okay with that, you know, and so then you could modify or amend the bill and the committee would vote on that. And if it were passed, then the bill would be this new amended version of the bill, and it would still move through the proper channels. If there's too many issues, then maybe the bill is dead for the time being, but then maybe a work group is established during the interim, which is the time period when we're not in session, and you bring all of the people involved in the conversation to the table and you work on the bill, and then next session you would bring it back, and it might be in a better place to move, or then there is that other alternative of the bill's just dead.
Right. Well, and as we mentioned earlier, there could be 3,000, maybe even 5,000 bills. And certainly we do not see 3,000 to 5,000 new laws every couple of years in Oregon. So some of them definitely just don't make it somewhere along the line.
Yes, correct.
All right. Well, thank you, Lucetta, for taking time to share about this. We look forward to our next conversation about all things life and legislation. So listeners, I hope you learned something new and that you come back next time for our next segment.